Season Saturday evening, October 19th at First Presbyterian Church with a focus on folk. The concert will feature the greatest folk songs ever written, a new choral work, and top local musicians. Tickets at choralartsonline.org. This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, vice president for community and government relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, we are talking with leadership of Kenosha Unified School District about a process underway to consider a possible funding referendum in the spring of 2025. What are the conditions that led leadership to consider a referendum? Where are they in the process right now? And if passed, what would the money be used for? So my guests today are Superintendent Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, who has worked in education since 1994. He actually began his career as a substitute teacher in Kenosha Unified, then as an English and reading specialist at Zion Benton Township High School. He's been leading schools since 2003, first as a sub-school principal at Washington Park High School in Racine, and then a variety of leadership positions, currently superintendent of Kenosha Unified. Welcome, Dr. Weiss.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Also joining us is Tariq Hamden, chief financial officer of Kenosha Unified. Mr. Hamden has served his entire career with Kenosha Unified, starting as an intern in the Office of Human Resources and Finance in 2003. Wow. He's been a chief financial officer since 2013, where he's focused on improving fiscal transparency and accountability. All of the easy years, right, Mr. Hamden? Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah. Finally, we have Tanya Reuter, chief communications officer with Kenosha Unified. Her career in public relations began in 2007. She served a variety of organizations in the public and private sectors, and she's been with Kenosha Unified since 2012 and strives to keep family, staff, and the general community informed and engaged, fostering a supportive environment for student success. Thank you for being here, Tanya.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So welcome, everyone. So I wanted to just start with something pretty basic. We are here today to talk about the upcoming proposed referendum for Kenosha Unified, but in case listeners may need a refresher, can one of you explain what a referendum is and a little about the circumstances in which referenda are proposed?
Yeah, sure, I can take that one. Mm-hmm. So in Wisconsin, the funding formula for Wisconsin public school districts is limited or capped. So the state legislators came up with a formula that basically determines how much we're legally allowed to take in for revenue from our two most basic sources, which is state aid and tax levies. In order to bring in revenue beyond that number, you have to ask your taxpayers' permission. So a referenda is a question to the taxpayers asking their permission to do something. Typically, there's two types of referenda questions. One is called a capital referenda, which is usually a question asked to borrow money to build something. So think of in KUSD when we did the athletic field improvements and we built the Bradford Football Stadium. That was a capital referendum. We put the question out to the public that said, do you support borrowing these funds, increasing your tax levy in order to do this project? The other types of referendum are called operating referendums. Those referendums are a question to exceed your revenue limit to increase the funding allowed for the schools to operate. And then within operating referenda, you have two different types. You can have something called a recurring referenda, which is really like a permanent referendum. Once it's approved, it's within your formula forever. Or you can have a non-recurring referenda that has a set time limit that says you will be allowed to increase your revenues by X amount for this many years. And then right. Circumstances that lead to needing a referenda question are when you are short of funding, or when the public wants something that is beyond what we're being funded for, you pose the question out to the public and that says, do you support doing this for that?
So, and these referenda, they can be put on the ballot whenever the school board votes for them to be on the ballot? Or how is the time frame chosen?
So they have to line up with elections, existing elections, but referenda questions can only be placed on a ballot by our governing board, a majority vote. So that's the only way that a question, that's the governing body of our taxing authority, is our school board.
Okay. All right. So do you know, has KUSD held referenda in the past, say 20 years or so, and under what circumstances?
Yeah, our experience with referenda are primarily capital referenda, so building things.
Mm-hmm.
Our last referenda in recent history was in 2015, for the athletic improvements, and that's when we built the Bradford Football Stadium was part of that, but we improved the fields at Tremper and Indian Trail as well as some other projects that we had built into there. Prior to that, we had in 2008, we also had the expansion of Indian Trail Academy at the time to make it a comprehensive high school, Indian Trail High School and Academy. That was two questions. There was a capital piece to build the structure, and then there was a small operating piece just specific to expanding that school. So we have not had a just general operating referendum in my time, which is over 20 years here in the school district, but we have had little pieces of operating referendum that were attached to expanding a school.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think that'll be really helpful for listeners as context for this. So what is the typical process for proposing a referendum? Is there a standard timeline, and where are you in this timeline right now?
Well, Tarek touched on a few pieces of that. The big piece being that the board owns this process along the way. So the biggest piece is showing the financial hardship that we have, and then taking the steps to show that hardship to our community, but then making sure that we have at least 70 days between the date of the election and the date that the board votes on putting the ballot language on the election. So there has to be a 70-day window between the date that they vote on putting something on a ballot and the election date. And then there's steps in between that you want to make sure you have in place. And so we're taking some of those steps now. I wouldn't say that there's an actual standard timeline other than that 70 days state statute that exists, but you want to ensure you have some steps in between there as well. So for us, we are taking some extra steps, extra measures, such as putting a survey together to find out from our community how they feel about a referendum, trying to gauge our community's support for that, how they would feel, and we'll use that to share that with our board so that when they make a decision on whether or not they want to go to referendum, that they're making an educated decision and that they can do so with the support of their community, hopefully.
Okay. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about the survey in a bit, but we'll just get sort of this basic stuff answered first, which is, so the next question is, what is the financial issue that KUSD is facing that's requiring the district to consider a referendum?
I can take that one as well. So there's two parts to our funding formula. Just to break it down in the most basic terms, there's two parts of that equation. It's how many students are you serving, and then what's the dollar amount that you're allowed per pupil. And that dollar amount per pupil, when these revenue limits were put into place in the early 1990s, were supposed to increase with inflation. So wherever they set that number was, every 2 years in the state budget, they were supposed to incorporate an inflationary increase in that per pupil amount, because we all know that things cost more to do every year as we go along. So just naturally, if you have a static dollar, it becomes worth less every year. That's one half of the equation. The other half is our declining enrollment. So as we lose students that we're serving in our district, our revenue or the size of our budget is going to go down over time. So we're hit with both sides of that on our revenue limit formula equation. The other conditions are just the rising costs of everything. And like I said, with the state formula not keeping up with the rising costs, our health insurance costs keep going up and up, just like everybody else. Cost of living, salary increases in order to recruit and retain staff, we have to keep up. And they're not kept up with the state increases. Working conditions and unfunded mandates that we're getting from the state. You know, our teachers are looking for more what we call professional time, where they're not directly sitting in front of a classroom of students and they can do planning and they can do assessments. We have unfunded mandates coming down from the state, where there's a big one coming with the new reading initiative. We're not giving extra funds to perform those initiatives, but we have additional expectations that our staff are required to do. So those are the types of things that are leading up to this why now kind of question of how did we get to this situation.
Okay. And then what steps has the district taken to address the financial issues already, Dr. Weiss?
Yes. So right now, at the beginning of the school year right now, we're implementing our right-sizing plan that we put together last year. And that involved the consolidation of quite a few programs and schools. I believe it was 7 total. And that resulted, and we also made some significant cuts at the Educational Support Center to the tune of about $1 million. So between those two, the right-sizing of schools and ESC, that resulted in, we're estimating about a $10 million annual savings from those measures. Some of the other things that we've done is we've utilized our ESSER money. ESSER money was given to school districts during the pandemic as a way to make up for learning loss, create some mitigation strategies, whether that was HVAC systems to filter the air better or other types of improvements like that. And we've utilized just about every dollar we've gotten from that, which involved moving some expenses that are operational over to that ESSER money in order to use it. And the reason why we had to do that is because when that ESSER money was given, the state, that was federal money, and the state did not provide any additional revenue increases during that 2-year period. So for that 2-year period, we and districts across the state received $0 increases in the revenue limit, which is money we use to operate the schools, and we had to use our ESSER money for that. And that time for using that money is now gone. It expires at the end of this month. So we made some strategic moves to use that money. We moved our summer school budget over to ESSER. We moved our half of our maintenance budget, our technology budget. We cut our curriculum materials budget. And we're at a point now where we need to bring those back online using operational money, using the regular budget. So those are the things that we put in place. Those strategies are now gone, and we need to bring things back online in our regular budget, in addition to the $10 million worth of cost savings we are realizing through the right-sizing process.
Okay. So just for listeners to know, one of the things that happened in the right sizing was some of the schools were condensed or combined. And I did an interview in August with a couple of the principals who were welcoming new students to their schools because of that combining. So if you want to go to the archives at wgtdfm.org, you'll be able to find that and hear about sort of people making really the best of that situation so that things could go smoothly. I just want to reintroduce, you're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion about a proposed funding referendum with leadership of Kenosha Unified School District will be archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So, Dr. Weiss, I'm sure you are in regular contact with superintendents around the state. How common are the issues that KUSD is facing? Are there other districts in Wisconsin that are proposing referenda?
Yeah, we're certainly not alone in the situation that we find ourselves in. This year, I just saw this on the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, one of my meetings that I had with them. It was mentioned that 149 school districts in the state this year alone are going for an operational referendum.
Wow.
Just to put that in perspective, there's 421 school districts in the state of Wisconsin. So that's well over a third of the districts in the state are in the situation. The previous record for number of school districts going for an operational referendum was in 2022. And at that point, 96 school districts went for, somewhere in the high 90s. Don't hold me to the 96. So, there were almost 100 school districts went for a referendum just 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Typically, they're longer than two-year periods that you're going for an operational referendum. So we really are in the state funding formula. I'm not going to say it's broken. I'm just saying it's not being funded to keep pace with inflation. And we are not alone in the situation that we find ourselves in.
Is this something that's been a topic of discussion among superintendents? I'm sure you have meetings, either real or virtual, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure it is. It's as we're trying to, with declining enrollments, and that's across the state, across the nation, the declining enrollments and the lack of a funding formula that's keeping pace with inflation really is a pretty solid 1-2 punch to the budgets of all school districts across the state. Mm-hmm. So this is a topic of regular interest to just about everybody, every superintendent and every school official that I speak with.
Okay. So what has been done as it relates to a referendum at this point?
Sure. Back in the spring, the late spring, the board approved hiring the Donovan Group to help to serve as a consultant as we go through this process. And the role, and I just want to be clear on this, the reason why getting the Donovan Group involved was so important is because we know we need to get our community input. We know how important that is. And with a city and a community as large as Kenosha Unified, it's more than just the city, as you know, we want to make sure that we are engaging our community, engaging our public in this process. So that was the push to get the Donovan Group involved, was to open up those lines of communication and get community feedback. Right now, one of the tools that we're using is a survey, and that survey is out today. It's available for the public to take, and we really do want to hear from our public, because these are our community schools. Public education is owned by the public. So we want to engage with our community, with our public, and tell our story, and as well as telling our story, talk to our community about some of the things we're talking about today. What steps have we taken already? What are our plans for the future? What would we do with that, with that extra revenue? Those are the types of conversations that we're looking to engage our community in. And that survey is available, if I could do a plug.
Sure.
That survey is available at KUSDsurvey.com. So you can go there to take the survey, have your voice heard. We really do want to hear from our public on that. Those results then, I'm sorry, I was just going to say the results then will be shared with the board. Based on those results, the board will vote on or not vote on, well, they'll vote to have a question or not to have a question. Mm-hmm. Our target for that is end of October to get the results to the board.
Okay. And listeners, just so you know, I will be putting the address for the survey on the Facebook page for Education Matters. And also probably it's at the top of your website, I'm guessing. Is that right?
Just for the KUSD? I believe it's pretty prominent, yes.
Yes. So, so they do really want to hear from you. So that's a great thing to get more information. Are you reaching out in other ways? Are there any like phone surveys or anything like that? Or how will you make sure that you're getting kind of a representative viewpoint on the survey?
So we will have a social media push. We'll be reaching out to our staff via email. We'll have emails to our families and our staff bulletin. So we'll have it out there in other various ways. We're also going to have a postcard that'll go out to families and the general community as well. So we'll be trying to reach people in a variety of ways just to make sure that they're seeing it and hopefully taking the survey, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, thank you to you for having us on so that we can get the word out as well.
Do you have any idea how long it would typically take to do? That's always a big thing for people when they're filling out a survey.
Yeah, it says 10 to 15 minutes. I've done a test and it took me probably around more around the 5 to 10 minute. It's really not a very long survey, but we would really appreciate everybody's time in taking it.
Okay, so everybody listening, make sure you go to KUSDsurvey.com if you want to have some input. It's worth that investment of your time, 10 to 15 minutes, right? So what is going to be asked on the survey?
Yeah, there's several things that we're looking at. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to tell our story, do a little bit of explaining in that. We want to keep that, we want to get the word out, but we don't want that to dominate the survey. Mm-hmm. What we're really looking for is feedback on three different options. Our first option is our base option. So for the 25-26 school year, we are looking at, our projections are for a $19 million deficit. So that first option is looking just at status quo, continuing what we're doing this year, will cost us an extra $19 million. I mentioned as some of those budget items come back online and we need to start funding them through regular district funds, that's part of it. Healthcare costs, inflation, salaries, all of that is included in that $19 million number. The second option that we're looking for feedback on is the base, keeping our programs as well as some academic enhancements. And those academic enhancements include teacher professional time. They also include more support for our reading program in the way of teachers and specialists to help with improving academics, mainly focused, not just focused on elementary, but looking at that K-12, some additional middle school courses and some high school improvements as well. And that's the base plus that academic enhancement is about $28 million. Then our final option that we're looking for feedback on is the base, the academic, and then safety improvements. Safety improvements we're talking about are making sure that we have updated software for our cameras, our safety and security cameras, additional safety and security personnel, potentially some deans, additional deans. That would be an additional $6 million or so. So that would be a $34 million referendum. So those are the three different buckets, as you will, that we're looking at as a district to get feedback on from our community.
And then what are the next steps after the survey?
Yeah, Dr. Weiss touched on this just briefly, but on October 22nd at the board meeting, Donovan Group will bring the data back for the board and present all of their findings from the survey. At that point in time, they'll share everything from the comments to all of the survey findings, and then that will give the board some time to think about what they would like to do as far as a survey question, whether they want to have a survey question at all, or whether they want to align more towards the $19 million, $28 million, or the $34 million. The survey question will hopefully show them where the strongest community support will fall, and that will allow them to formulate their survey question in an area that would align with the community support, and that can either be brought forward for the November 19th board meeting or the December 10th board meeting would be the next two board meetings that would follow, and that would allow for that 70-day window that we talked about a bit earlier in order for the ballot question to be put on the February 18th, 2025 election.
Okay, so I think that's makes it pretty clear that you aren't rushing into anything. You're actually taking all of these very careful steps, paying attention to what people in the district want and what feedback they're going to give you. So just to be aware, it seems like it's been a pretty long process already. And you haven't even gotten to the point of the vote. So that I think this probably should be reassuring for listeners. The board would vote on the ballot language in either November or December is what you just said. If they decide to have a referendum, then what happens?
If they take action and they formulate the question and they vote on the ballot language, then we would quickly launch an informational campaign. And then it's boots on the ground, and we are hosting informational meetings, and we are going out, and we are basically attending a variety of meetings ourselves. You'd probably see a lot more of Dr. Weiss-Tark and myself out at a variety of different meetings. We would be sharing a lot more information, again, about the specific question now, rather than just talking generally about referendum and what a referendum is. It would be based around the actual ballot question that has been approved. And we'd be basically informing the voters of what the district needs are and why we would like them to come out and vote on February 18th, 2025, and how it would support our students and our staff and Kenosha Unified as a whole.
Okay. And if perchance there is no referendum, the board decides not to put one forward, or if there is one and it doesn't pass, what do you see as potential cuts in the future?
Right. And that's really coming up with what those cuts would be really is part of the planning process and the discussions that that we're beginning now to start for that planning for 25-26. And just to be honest, a lot of the low-hanging fruit we've already picked. To come up with $19 million in cuts, the district will look different. And that's part of the question that we need to ask our community is, what's your vision for KUSD schools? That's a significant amount of money to come up with. And we've done a lot of work with right-sizing. We've done a lot of work with budget trimming already and reducing our workforce. So it really, we're at the point now where things will look different. And I don't know exactly what it will look like. We'll start that process, but it's significant.
Right. Okay. I just want to do a reintroduction. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion about a proposed funding referendum with leadership of Kenosha Unified School District is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So I'm sure that there are people listening or that you will contact you or will receive the survey who are a little skeptical as taxpayers of any new taxes or spending on schools, especially if they don't currently have children in KUSD schools. So what is your message for them?
If I can jump in on that one a little bit. So the first part of the message that I would give to that skeptical taxpayer is to please remember that we are one part of your tax bill. So in fact, the tax levy from KUSD, the tax levy from us for KUSD for public schools is proposed at $4 million less than it was last year. And if you go back even to 2011, it's $16 million less than it was in 2011. Now, I'm not disputing that people's taxes have gone up, and they certainly may have. Property taxes have gone up. Values have gone up. Other entities that are taxing, their portion of the tax bill have gone up. But please remember that our portion has gone down since 2011, and significantly, by $16 million. And then another piece is that within our tax levy, even that reduced tax levy, we are forced to pass through other levies for other entities that are not ours. So think of things like private school vouchers. We are forced to have on our tax rosters the levy for those private school vouchers, special education vouchers, and independent charter schools to get their funding. So those are all pieces that flow through us, look like a tax from us, but go right out the door to another entity. So please keep those things in mind. Another piece I would say is that the promise in the state formula for inflationary increase simply wasn't kept. So absent that promise, we're looking for help. We need to make our budget balance. And then the other piece is the hole that was created by that federal funding that we all waved the flags on and said, this is not a good idea. We really need the state funding. This is not a substitute for it. And honestly, the attitude at the state level was, we'll worry about that when we have to worry about it. Go use your federal funding for now. So that is just financial practice, which we all knew was a bad practice, but the time has now come to address those things.
And as I understand that there's a surplus in the state budget, is that correct? Not just for schools, just overall?
Yes, there is. There's a $7 billion surplus at the state level in money that's not making its way to the people who pay taxes. So that's a big piece of this. And I just wanted, if I could just underline or highlight one of the things that Mr. Hamden said about the state funding not keeping up with inflation. Had it kept up with inflation, had the state fulfilled the promise that they made, that would have meant an extra $31 million for Kenosha Unified alone in operating expenses and annual operating expenses. With that, had that happened, with an additional $31 million in our budget, we wouldn't be here on the radio with you today talking about this. Because they didn't keep their promise, we've got to go and we've got to ask our taxpayers to do that. So I just wanted to be clear on that.
Okay. And then this is a really general question, but, you know, what do you think is the biggest misconception the public has about KUSD or about public schools in general? Since so many are going to be asking for money, do they not know this statewide budget picture, or what are some of the things that you hear?
So I'll take a stab at it, and then Tark, if Mr. Hamden or Ms. Reuter, if you want to jump in, please do. One of the things that is often touted, the funding formula for schools is very complicated. And state aid is often confused with revenue limit. So there's a big difference. Revenue limit is money that school districts can actually spend. State aid is money that the state gives to local municipalities to offset property taxes. And many times you'll hear that a record amount of money was put into public education, and many times that takes the form of state aid. So that's not money that the school district can spend. That really boils down to property tax relief. So I think, to me, that's one of the biggest misconceptions I've heard, is that, well, you got a ton of new state aid. We don't. We get that money isn't money we can spend. That money is property tax relief, and I'm all for that. I'm a property owner too. I've got a house. That's great. However, it doesn't help schools if the revenue limit isn't increased. So that's probably the most common one that I've heard.
Anybody else?
I would agree with that. Just the concept that we are limited. We're controlled. We're capped. Mm-hmm. That formula tells us how much money we can take in. And then, as Dr. Weiss just mentioned, that total number, that does not change. That does not increase the size of our budget. They give us more state aid. That just means less on the property tax side of that equation.
And listeners may be interested. I was snooping around on the KUSD YouTube earlier today, and I saw that there was a presentation last week sort of about all these issues. That was part of the annual, what was the meeting? It's the annual electors meeting?
Annual meeting of electors and the public hearing of the budget.
Right. And so people that are really interested in the details, that was an incredibly informative presentation, including like screen full of all the budget numbers. So I would just say, if this is not quite enough information for you, there is plenty of information out there. This is all a very public process, so you can definitely check it out. Where could listeners go to find out more about the survey or otherwise follow the process for the proposed referendum?
Yeah, we've built a web page for this just to capture everything, and then as we go through the process, we'll add an FAQ, and that can be found at kusd.edu/referendum. Okay. And we'll continue to add information as it becomes available and as we add more, as the ballot question, if it becomes approved by the board, we'll add information about that on the page as well. Right now, there's a great video from the Wisconsin Association of Business Officers that has some explanation of school finance. It really breaks it down into an easy to understand, or easier, I should say, to understand for people who really don't understand school finance, because it is such a complex topic. So that's on there as well. And just a few other things that are on there, but we will continue to add to that site as we go along.
What do you see as the relationship, this could be for anybody, between having to maybe pay more in property taxes if this were to happen, maybe a little bit more, but what does that mean for housing value and the value of living in this community?
You know, schools really are the hub of a community. When families are looking to relocate, when businesses are looking to relocate, the schools most likely are at the top of the list in your determining factor as far as where you want to establish your new company or where you want to begin to raise your family. Schools are at the heart of it. One thing I want to mention as well with this referendum idea, we don't have a referendum yet. One thing I want to make sure to hit is that there are other districts, there are neighboring districts who have already made the decision to go for referendum and passed. My concern for the community is that if this is something that we don't do, we'll fall behind some of our neighboring districts. With the way that we can attract and retain the best teachers and the best staff, and what we can offer our students, and what we can offer our families, and all of those things that make Kenosha Unified great, our arts program, our theater program, our sports, those are all part of what make us great as a district, and I don't want to see us fall behind.
Okay, thank you for that. I like to end interviews with stories about real people, so I wonder if each of you has a story or two you can share about KUSD, what people have been saying this past year during the right-sizing process and other efforts you've made to, you know, have to absorb some of the shortfall in the budget.
I'll go ahead and kick it off, and then somebody feel free to jump in. One of the things that the right-sizing process really brought home to me was how much our families love their schools. It was going through right sizing, and I don't want to sugarcoat that. That was very difficult. That was a very painful process that we went through. It was a very necessary one too, based on our enrollment. There were factors based on our budget, there were things that we had to do, and right sizing was one of them. Coming out of that, the work that we have done and started planning to do back in the spring, as far as welcoming our new families to their new homes, we had principals go to schools where they knew they were going to get a sizable amount of students and read stories during lunchtime and introduce themselves during lunchtime. We had open houses to invite families in back in the spring if they were going to be attending a new school so that they could see it back before September, so they could see it in May. National Night Out, on August 6th, we had every school in the district had a booth, was out in the community welcoming their families, serving hot dogs. I remember seeing the principal at Curtis Strange grilling hot dogs for people as they came in. To me, that caring and that welcoming and that concern about making families feel welcome says a lot about our community, says a lot about our staff, and says a lot about the people of KUSD who want to be as welcoming and make people feel like school is their home. And that, to me, seeing that work that's gone on since the spring to today, really has been heartwarming.
And I can piggyback on that a bit, too. Even at National Night Out, I had walked up to one of the booths, and one of the principals was really excited to be there, and she wasn't necessarily certain what it was going to be like, and she was really happy to be there. She had put out the request to see if anybody wanted to join her for the night, and she was very surprised that two of the people who asked to join her were some of the new staff that had transferred to her building as part of the right sizing process, and she was just really happy to have them join her for that night, and they were having such a good time getting to know each other, and it was just an opportunity for them to connect, and it was a great way for them to head into the new school year. On top of that, we've seen through our staff newsletter a lot of really heartfelt thank yous from the staff that have had to move about the district. Definitely starting with some of the, you know, this has not been easy, but thank you to the staff who have welcomed me into my new building, my new family, and I just want to extend my gratitude to you for welcoming me into my new home. And that, so it's been really great to see our staff, or to hear those stories as you walk into a building, to see our staff helping each other move forward through something that was a really hard year, and seeing them move forward together. And if they're doing that together, you know that that rolls down to our students so that they are also having a good start to the school year, and that they're all doing everything together to make sure everybody's going to be successful this year. So what was really hard and kind of scary is coming forward and is actually, it's going okay. You know, like it's going okay. Together, everything is going okay.
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, personally, the emotion wasn't, didn't pass me by. I'm a product of KUSD, so born and raised in the city. I attended Jane Vernon Elementary School. I attended Lincoln Junior High at the time and Tremper High School. So, you know, seeing some of my own personal history being included in the consolidation, it does take an emotional toll on you. But when you separate the emotional piece, if we had to rebuild our school district from scratch today, we can't ignore the fact that we're nearly 4,000 less students than we were. So to be responsible with taxpayer funding and to be cognizant of that fact, I mean, we just, something that nobody wanted to do but was necessary. And we needed to consolidate our services. We needed to make sure that we were running as efficient as possible, not just for today, but the trend of our enrollment for the foreseeable future is also on the downward trend. So we didn't do that lightly, and it wasn't just to address today, to address the future as well.
Okay, well, thank you for those, all of that. I think that was very helpful and reassuring to people. I did get to tour the new Washington Middle School when they were just finishing up before the school year started, and I had two eighth graders who were so happy to show off their new school to, as my tour guides. And so I would say, there's been a lot of preparation to make people feel welcome, from what I can tell. So thank you for all of that. Thank you for meeting with me today. My thanks to guest Kenosha Unified School District Superintendent Jeffrey Weiss, Chief Financial Officer Tarek Hamden, and Chief Communications Officer Tanya Reuter. You've been listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert. This discussion about a proposed funding referendum with leadership of the Kenosha Unified School District is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in the discussion there. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org. Support comes from Inspire 2024, a premier one-day leadership development experience presented by the Kenosha Area Business Alliance, featuring high-caliber national and regional speakers and experts, providing inspirational content to elevate your personal and professional leadership journey, and bringing out the best in our lives, work, teams, and community. This year's Inspire is October 11th. The lineup features Google's chief strategist, Neil Hoyne. Learn more at inspirekenosha.com.
In a world filled with possibilities and wonder, we can always find great